This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Good to be with you today. Matt and Patrick here. Patrick, we've got not only do we have Brett joining us with a little bit later on with Patrick Cooligan, which we'll get an update from the Minnesota Reformer, but Max Watanowicz is going to join us as well. He is currently starring in a part of that magnificent ensemble and Into the Woods over at the Guthrie Theater that runs till August 13th. Max is going to be kind enough to join us in the 4 o'clock hour to talk about that. And the dude was just in Hamlet. I think he was just in the Hamlet they had. And so I got to ask him a little bit about, because the turnaround on that, because that went right from Hamlet to Into the Woods. A, he must have been busy as all get go. And B, it must be interesting to do that. I'll have to talk to him as well. How are you today?
Doing pretty well. I'm going to drop this on you. Today is my birthday.
It's your birthday.
It is my birthday.
Well, thank God I got you this highlighter for your birthday.
Just what I needed.
Oh, there you go. It's half used, but that means it's been loved. It's a family heirloom. It's all yours. How old are you, my friend?
I am 33 today.
33 years old. Dear Lord, you are 22 younger than me. I'm an old. I remember when I thought 33 was, I'm old at 33. No, young. Oh, back when arms and legs didn't creak when I used them, didn't set off the metal detector with the amount of metal I've got in my body. Happy birthday. Any fun plans for you tonight?
I'm going to pick up some of my favorite local pizza and then just relax.
Good. Well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Alrighty. I appreciate it.
I'm going to cover that pizza for you. I'm dead serious. I'm covering the pizza for you tonight, okay? I don't need a slice. I don't need a slice, but I'm covering that pizza for you tonight. 952-946-6205. I almost had tragedy today. Well, not tragedy. I want to be careful here. So because my life now, ever since the car accident, has been a never-ending litany of medical appointments. I had one today, and the guy said, my doctor says, hey, why don't you go over and, just get some blood work done just really quick here to see how things are going. No problem, right? I got a trainee. Now, have you ever gone to the labs and had the person who is one of their first days trying to draw blood? Have you ever had that there, Patrick?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've got like a 12-gauge pipe running through each arm. You miss that vein. I'm going to be very honest. Maybe medicine's not for you. It really is. I've got I've only one time before this did I have a person who was having a hard time finding a vein in my arm. And so, I'm sitting there and I got the thing out there and, she's, kind of tapping on. She got the rubber band around my bicep and I'm making a squeezing sound. And I can see the vein. I can see the vein. And she's like, isn't that the vein? I'm not sure. Okay, let's try the other arm. All right, yeah, okay, I'm on board with that. I like that. Once again, there's that 12-gauge pipe that's running through my elbow. Hey, there it is. Oh, I don't know if that's it. And she says, now, I don't know if you've ever had to be the hospital, you know what this is like. Ever had to have like IVs in your hand, in the back of your hand, because you have so many IVs in you? I had that happen in December when I was in the hospital. Getting them in the back of your hand sucks. Now, they're easy veins to hit, but it hurts. It's not nice. And I looked, I said, I'd rather not put this in the back of my hand. And that's when the manager came over and took over and within 20 seconds finished me up. And that was it. Done. I'm all for it. And I don't mind being a pincushion to a point. But if I can look down, I'm not exactly Johnny Doctor here. If I can look down and say, hey, isn't that the vein? And you're like, I don't know. I'm not sure. Oh, okay. All righty. good luck. I hope it gets, I'll chalk it up to nervousness. I hope to see you again the next time I go into the labs. Just don't worry about it. It will come. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So I have, I just very briefly, because I just don't want to give this guy too much attention. I posted last night on the Twitter machine and the social media accounts, the recaps of the show. And one of the things I always post is I post the, you know, kind of other stories there. And of course, yesterday we spent a good chunk of the first hour talking about the movie The Sound of Freedom and the made-up conspiracy theory that the far right is trying to use the movie as a springboard to try to go out there. And this is this adrenochrome thing where they think this is real. It's not. It actually, we talked about it extensively. You can go podcast the show from yesterday. It's actually from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, the Hunter S. Thompson book. That's basically where they're taking this from. But it has become something that happened. And I said yesterday that this is something that they love their Pizzagate. And when Pizzagate kind of blew up in their face because someone walked into the pizza joint with a gun and started firing rounds, and they all like, well, I never said it was real. They all wanted to get back to it, so they're now back to it, and they're now saying that this is going out there. Now, once again, the problem I have with this is that there is actual human trafficking going on here, which doesn't seem to be a really big priority unless it can be used to vilify the Democrats. As I said yesterday, you know, the Republicans, they kind of live in a delusional world. They want to be the hero of their story. They politicize everything, and you know, they're kind of, you know, kind of losers that just need to validate themselves. And so they keep coming up with these conspiracy theories because the candidates they have chosen, they know themselves are fraudulent. So they have to create these, you know, uber bizarro scenarios. The other side of that argument was the point I made is that, you know, I am against human trafficking. I you know, and once again, the movie, The Sound of Freedom, it itself sounds very CSI Columbia, I guess is where it takes place. And, you know, it's your standard Hollywood movie. And it doesn't sound like it does QAnon stuff in there. The where it gets QAnon connection is the actor and the guy the story is based on both have said this is the liberals and the global elitists are basically stealing children's blood to get the adrenochrome. And once again, we pointed out yesterday that that's centuries old blood libel, primarily against the Jews, but as well, they're using this global elites, which they for them is Hollywood celebrities and democratic leaders. And that's kind of what they're doing. And they get very upset about this in these made up cases of like Pizzagate, where they're furious about that. But then they don't really seem to be too bothered at times with other actual cases of child and human trafficking. Case in point, I brought up that right now there are two Republican governors, Abbott in Texas and, you know, Meatball Ron down in Florida. Meatball Ron is really not going to get beat, man. Meatball Ron is just beautiful. I don't give Trump credit on much, but Meatball Ron, that's good, man. I'm with that one. Meatball Ron down in Florida. Anyway, they're basically trafficking human beings by loading immigrants on planes and shipping them to other cities with no warning, no nothing. They're human trafficking. They themselves are trafficking humans. And the same people who are applauding The Sound of Freedom and coming up with this conspiracy theory are also applauding that human trafficking. So there's that. And then, of course, I brought up the fact that under the Trump administration, over 5,000 children were separated from their parents with very little in the way of ability to track them. And there has been a Herculean effort to try to remedy this problem, to basically try to reunite these kids with their families. As of today, near 700 of them still have yet to be reunited with their families. And some of them they can't find because it's pretty clear the Trump administration just gave these children to random people who they were not family members, and they have been human trafficked. And so if you're upset about human trafficking, especially human trafficking of children, you'd think you'd be bothered by this. I brought these points up. I'll stand by the points. Walter Hudson, the Republican who represents St. Michael Albertville, apparently has called me a monster because, well, because I'm right. And he has nothing else to say. And that's the only thing I want to say about it. Because I had a few people say, you know, he's saying bad things. I muted him because he doesn't want to be a House rep. He wants to be an internet troll. And I don't quite know what to do with that because it's just as sad. I mean, it's sad. He's a sad, sad man who's looking for validation, desperately looking for validation. And so him calling me a monster, well, you know, he wants to do that's fine. The reason he's calling me a monster is because he knows I'm right and that Republicans do not care about the 700 kids that Trump separated from their families that have not either been found or reunited with their families, and that they don't care. As a matter of fact, they applaud the human trafficking being conducted by Meatball Ron and Jim Abbott right now in this country. They applaud that, and they don't want the hypocrisy to stink them up. I'm against all human trafficking, okay? I am. Funny story. And you know what? I can sit here and be outraged by human trafficking without making up some sort of bizarro Hunter S. Thompson inspired conspiracy theory with the sole purpose of vilifying my enemies. I can sit there and say, human trafficking is pretty bad and seen. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I want to go into, we got to talk about this weather right now. I just got the alert from the New York Times. They said that Phoenix has now broken the record for 19 consecutive days over 110 degrees. Jeez. I remember walking off an airplane into Phoenix in May at like 8:30 at night, and it was 92, and it hit me like a plank to the face. It's like, dear God, and I don't care if it's a dry heat. 92 is 92. Ugh. 110. Over 110. That's 18 degrees hotter. That's like a sauna. They had people in Vegas apparently on the plane. There was a plane waiting to taxi to take off, and they passed out because the plane got so hot on the runway. An example of simultaneous compounding extreme weather and climate events, which scientists have been warning for decades. Record highs are being set Tuesday in U.S., Europe, and parts of Asia. The heat waves poses immediate risk to public health, economic output, and the sign that climate change impacts are escalating faster than expected in some parts of the globe. In the U.S., extreme heat may have lessened in a few areas, such as the Pacific Northwest, but it is ramping up in others. Sprawling heat dome remains stuck over the southwestern United States, influencing the entire southern tier of the country. Phoenix on Tuesday beat its all-time record for the longest string of days with high temperatures at or above 110. It also has beaten its record for the most consecutive days with lows at or above 90 degrees Fahrenheit, with a minimum temperature on Tuesday morning reaching a stifling. This is your low. Your low was 94. Dear Lord. This makes Tuesday the ninth day in a row of overnight temperatures at or above 90, a new record likely to be bested on Wednesday. In Europe, parts of France, Spain are hitting all-time record highs Tuesday with an extreme event known as a heat wave cerebrus. In Catalonia, Spain, a high of 113 was recorded with weather record tracker Maximiliano Herrera. I'm supposed to know that name? I don't know. This is from Axios. The heat event is absolutely historic and shattering records with huge margin in dozens of stations. History is being rewritten today between Spain and France, he did write via Twitter. The heat waves come at a time when the global average surface temperatures have hit all-time highs during July, which scientists have said are likely the highest levels in at least 125,000 years. Italy is also brutally hot on Tuesday. The southern Mediterranean heat wave peaks. Rome saw a new record for the city at 109 in Rome. Okay, I was stationed in the military over there. Now, I went to France and I went to Spain and I went to Italy. There's not a lot of air conditioning down there. AC is something that's an American invention. That's, and I'm not saying that there aren't some places with AC. There are, but there's a lot of places in Europe that do not have air conditioning. And these places are just, I mean, Paris, there's not a lot of people that have air conditioning in Paris. They've been trying to change that, but yeah, it's just stifling. It reminds me of my wife and I, when we lived down in Iowa, and we would do these kind of community outreach programs, which were a lot of fun, actually. You got to go meet some elderly farm families and stuff like that. And, you know, she got into a conversation with this one woman who remembered this heat wave they had, which wasn't anything like this, but she said that they would basically open every window, every door of the house. You would rather have the bugs in the house than the heat, and you would sleep outside and stuff like this. It's just brutal. It's just brutal, and it's just something you have to kind of deal with in many of these places. And there's not much of a reprieve. Warnings were in effect for more than a dozen cities in Italy due to the public health risk of such higher temperatures at a time when throngs of tourists, many unaccustomed to such weather, are in the country. The heat waves are not mere coincidences. The jet stream pattern is highly amplified, with large waves diverting storms to the north and south and favoring strong areas of high pressure or heat domes that sit intensely, bringing even higher and higher temperatures. Record heat in China, where the country set a provincial record of the highest temperature on record, with a reading of 126 in Sanbao on Sunday. Beijing, where climate envoy John Kerry is meeting with top Chinese officials to discuss joint efforts to tackle planet-warming greenhouse gas emissions, is enduring his day a record stretch of 95-degree days. Monthly high temperature records are also being set in Japan, said Hera. As it happened more regularly in recent years, the Persian Gulf's unique combination of extreme temperatures and high humidity has led to an astonishingly high heat indices, or feels like temperatures. An airport in coastal Iran saw a heat index of 152 on July 16th. Such temperatures are difficult for humans to survive. Studies have shown the Persian Gulf countries could be among the first to exhibit heat beyond survivable limits during part of each year. I'll come back to this in just a second, but folks, this is not new. And the reality is, as I'm reading this, you would say to yourself, holy God, what are we going to do? You think they'd be there, but there are a lot of people who's like, well, that sucks. Anyway, let's go back to watching the Kardashians. We're getting to the point where there are places on the planet where millions of people live, which are uninhabitable for at least a part of the year. This is a big freaking problem. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break, come on back, more on this, and how it's affecting us here in Minnesota as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Now I'm getting people sending me stuff here. Mark in Minneapolis sending me in Furnace Creek. This is in California, 119 degrees right now. Yikes. 119 degrees. Dr. Joe sent me something. You know how they say that when we have the smoke from Canada down here, that if we get like above 150, that's trouble? You know how there's? He sent me someplace where the parts per million of CO2 are 412. 412. Where are they? Nobito? I'm going to guess, is this China or is this Japan? I'm not sure. He says this actually is at his house. Taking it out tomorrow, if I take it outside, the PM levels increase from fires. If you go into the businesses above 550 parts per million, you have to turn around. Wow. Wow. It's crazy. Just crazy. These heat waves occurring at the same time coinciding with global temperature milestones demonstrate how the climate is not a linear system and can cross thresholds behind which impacts become more severe. Texas A&M University climate and scientist Andrew Dessler told Axios, it also is keeping with scientists' research that highlights the risk of simultaneous dangerous heat waves occurring on multiple continents at the same time. According to the NOAA Climate Prediction Center, A continuation of above average temperatures is expected through at least the rest of July and into early August across the Southwest and West. In coming years, the excessive heat occurrences now is forecast to become commonplace in future decades across, according to figures provided to Axios from the IFC Climate Center, which is working on the next national climate assessment from government agencies. The latest generation of computer models shows that Phoenix is projected to go from 12 days per year with temperatures at or above 110 to 40 days per year above that 110 by 2050. And here's where I kind of get mad at Axios. Their bottom line is we better get used to more scorching heat. No. Maybe we should actually get, as opposed to say, well, what you going to do? Maybe we should try to do freaking something. I don't know. Try to stop the craziness that is all this. All right. You have already got a few things going on. Phoenix, Arizona. No one used to live down there. I mean, even when it became a state, one of the things that people were saying is, why should this become a state? There's no one that lives down there. It's only when air conditioning was invented that people decided, I'm going to go move to the freaking desert. It was something for many years most of us tried to avoid. And the people that did live there had hundreds of years of expertise on how not to die in the desert, as opposed to some guy going, I like sun. I better go there and get a tan. We are now at the point of creating areas where it's unsafe for humans to live for part of the year because of the outrageous amount of heat. We have had, cases where there's been wars fought because climate change has wiped out crops. And they've actually had military conflicts over food and water resources. We hear, the reason why we're smoky is because most of northern Canada, which generally doesn't dry out as much as it is, for goodness sakes, this is a part of the world that's under feet of snow for a substantial amount of the year. But because it's getting so hot, it's melting off and it's just tinder up there. There's a lot of things going on in Minnesota, too. I mean, warming temperatures are leading to an increase of Lone Star ticks in Minnesota, a bug traditionally found in Texas. That's not in Texas. Because it's now hot enough for them to be here. People are urging to be on the lookout for algae blooms on Lake Superior, which can be on Lake Superior, not some dishpan lake that's, half a mile across. One of the deepest, coldest lakes on the planet is now warming up enough to where you can get the deadly algae blooms. I'll come back to that a little bit later on. We have animal populations migrating. We have bugs and insects and diseases that used to never be around here that are now commonplace. We have scorching hot days. How much rain have we had in Minneapolis, St. Paul since, April? How much? A few inches? We're grossly behind. We have got a real serious problem here. And instead of sitting there and saying, well, I guess we just have to get used to the heat. Maybe, just maybe, it's time for us to start looking at these people who say climate change isn't real, so it's a little bit warmer. And these are the same people that, it's so hot outside. It's a real shame. It's just too hot. This is real, folks. This is getting real. I have said in my lifetime, I bet you we will have a winter without snow. I want you to roll that one around in your mind. In Minneapolis, St. Paul, in my lifetime, I'm almost positive we will have at least one winter with no snow. It will stay too warm to snow. And as opposed to saying, sweet Jesus, what the heck are we doing here? We need to fix this immediately. I'll prepare myself for the bought and paid for stooges on the right to sit there and say, so I didn't have to shovel this year. Matt McNeil's all upset about that. Why are all the trees dying? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Hey, when we come back, it's a rarity, but occasionally we do this. It's time for Country Music Roundup here with Matt McNeil and the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Just if I can take a quick moment to send all of our best from everyone here at AM 950 last Friday. Stephanie Miller, of course, the longtime morning show host here, mid-morning host, lost her mom. Her mom passed away. On behalf of everyone here at the station, Chad, the entire crew here, all of our best to her, her family, and all my prayers to her mom. That's a very tough loss. I mean, she's talked a lot about how the influence and the support that she's gotten from mom, and so all our best there. I hope they are able to weather that storm. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Quick side note here to you: Buxton's not playing DH tonight. Is that your birthday gift, the twins' birthday gift to you this week?
I was actually going to mention that to you at the top of the show. It'll be Matt Wallner getting the DH slot tonight. And there have been a lot of people said, why the heck did you call him up if you're not going to play him? And now they finally are putting him in the lineup.
Is the reason why they've been keeping Buxton in the lineup? And once again, I want to remind everyone, they could have probably traded Buxton for Lopez, and we'd still have Louis Arise on the team. Is the reason why that they still are reluctant to take Buxton out at DH, even when he's below 200 at DH, is because he still is probably one of their top jersey sellers. And the reality is that the Twins organization doesn't really give a crap about the quality of product on the field. It's more about, well, we just got to make sure the jerseys sell. That's my theory.
That could definitely be part of it, I think.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see. They lost last night there in Seattle again tonight. And is that another 8:40 start time?
Yep, I think it's 8:40 tomorrow, and then a little bit of a reprieve Thursday. It'll probably be about 3:00.
Okay. They got four in Seattle then.
Yep.
Okay. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's time for Matt McNeil's Country Music Roundup. I don't pull out that accent too often. It's time for Country Music Roundup. I have been on a country music station. It was a hoot. Anywho, some stories here about country music, and yeah, I'll go with the lighter one first. This is Miranda Lambert. Now, I actually like Miranda Lambert. I don't like a lot of country music because, frankly, a lot of it's a bit contrived. If you ask me, this is not just the only genre of music where there's a lot of contrived elements to it. I mean, for God's sakes, pop music has been making the same style of music now for basically 40 years with very little variation of it and things like that. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't some people who aren't good at it and stuff. I think part of it is this chip on your shoulder kind of existence. Maybe because when I grew up with the Urban Cowboy, that was, country music didn't look to create divides between rural and urban America. That there was this idea that this was country music was a part of Americana as it was. I mean, guys, think about a guy like Eddie Rabbit. And by the way, one of my favorite guys, I loved his music. I really did. I loved Eddie Rabbit. Very, kind of a poppy country music that, resonated everywhere. Everyone listened to him. And I'm not saying that there aren't a lot of fans of country music around. I'm not. But it's always, you city hellcats, you don't get us out here. Yeah, that sort of thing. And the reality is it's that repeated message that has helped create this divide. Now, I'll get to that a little bit more in the second story. Miranda Lambert is actually one of the people I really do enjoy. I think some of her songs are very original. I think her lyrics are very good. And she's got a ton of talent. I mean, Miranda Lambert is actually an insanely talented person. I think she could. She stayed with country, and bless her heart, she could. I think she could have easily gone into other different genres if she wanted to, but she wants to stay a country artist, and bless her on that. I'm a big fan. That's why it was a little disheartening when, basically you heard today she had a little bit of a spat on Sunday in Vegas. She's performing out there in Vegas, and she was singing the ballad Tin Man. Good song. And she, right in the middle of it, says, I'm going to stop you right there, and starts berating some of the audience members for taking photos. And so the first thing I said to myself, oh, okay, prima donna, here you go. I was like, oh, heaven forbid. I mean, if you go to any concert, I don't care where you're at, any concert, three quarters of the people are sitting there with their phones out the entire time. And even in Vegas in other places, it is what happens. It is just annoying to a point. But at the same time, I can't be too critical because I've taken photos at concerts myself. Do I take a lot of them? Try not to. I try to enjoy the show as much as I can. But even when it's my favorite bands, I always try to take a few pictures because I like to share them with you guys out there. But still, I mean, there are people who basically will film the entire concert. And, that's what they want to do. That's there. She's then pointing to the audience while saying, these girls are worried about their selfie, and I'm listening to the song and not listening to the song, and it's pissing me off a little bit, is her exact term. I don't like it at all, she said, adding, we are here to hear some country music tonight. I'm singing some country damn music. Shall we start again? The Vegas audience showed their support for the Grammy winner by applauding her remarks. Lambert then continued singing the song she had paused. There have not been apparently too many comments there. Lambert's remarks were set with mixed reaction on social media, with some commenting the captured footage memorializing Kanye as part of the excitement. She is far from the first artist to express frustration with concertgoers preoccupied with their phones. But now, Bruno Mars, Silk Sonic, basically, both when they were there, they were doing their Vegas residencies. They required attendees to lock their phones in a pouch come showtime. They just wanted people to come enjoy the show. Mars spoke at the time during the interview with Los Angeles Times last year, saying, being the master of ceremonies and being able to read the room, understanding the dynamics of what the room needs to feel like, that feeling goes a long way when you're looking at a wall of phones. With the cameras, you're like, I don't know if I want to try out this dance move tonight, or if you're afraid the joke might go on the internet. Adele, like Lambert, paused a 2016 concert when she noticed someone taking a cell phone video, as seen ironically in footage posted to social media by the fan attending the same concert. I want to tell the lady as well, can you stop filming me with the video camera because I'm really here in real life and you can enjoy the real life rather than through your camera. Now, I'm going to get back to this because there is a context here where I am 100% on Miranda Lambert's side. I'll get to that in a second. Maybe if you didn't require people to sell a freaking kidney to get a good seat for your concert, maybe they wouldn't feel like they have to videotape it to keep it for austerity's sake. And that's what I want to say to all these people, is that you're charging $700, $800, $1,200 to sit anywhere near the stage in these shows. That is not an amount of money a lot of people have around just in their pockets. It's just not. So they're out there getting a few shots. What's the big freaking deal, man? I'm sorry. I don't have the problem with it because part of this is your mistake. As you sit there, and once again, I'm here in real life. You can enjoy the real life then rather through your camera. Well, then don't charge $800 freaking dollars for a seat, because that's the one time in their life they are going to have a chance to see you and they want to remember it. Ta-da! I don't mean to be so blunt, but don't charge a freaking arm and a leg for a concert ticket then if you're expecting people to not videotape it, because most people can't afford to go to more than one of your shows. here's where I'm going to back up Miranda Lambert. This wasn't that. This wasn't just some people holding up their cell phones and taking some images. They had turned around, so they were facing away from Miranda Lambert. They put the flash on their phone on in selfie mode and were taking pictures where the point was not Miranda Lambert, but them in front of Miranda Lambert. So here is Miranda Lambert on the stage trying to sing this song, and people have flashing cameras going off in front of her freaking face as their backs are to her. I'm sorry, I'm 100% Miranda Lambert here. That's different than videotaping the show. That is basically trying to turn this into All About You, and that's fine. Some people have said, well, they paid the money for the ticket, they should be able to do that. But, okay, then don't put the flash on where you're interfering with the concert, because that's what you're doing. So you can get a picture. You basically are snapping all these shots so the flash is going off. So basically here she is up on stage trying to sing the song, and she's got flashing lights like she's gone into a movie premiere night. I'm 100% on Miranda Lambert's on that, because that seems a little out of line to have people turn their back to her, stand up, put the flash on their camera on, and take selfies with Miranda Lambert in the background as she's supposed to sit there and supposed to sing from her heart as flash bulbs are going on, or the flash bulbs, the flash on your iPhones are going off constantly left and right. I just dated myself. 952-946-6205. So I Miranda Lambert on her side, but overall, musicians, you don't want people filming your concerts, then don't make it a once-in-a-lifetime experience with the ticket cost. How about that? Now, that being said, let's get to our second story, because this one's got a little bit more, what the hell, man, has to do with Jason Aldean. Now, if you didn't know, he was in the news because he had a heat-related medical incident during a concert over the weekend. Country superstar Jason Aldean is taking more heat for a song that seemingly takes aim at Black Lives Matter protesters, if not the entire urban population. Once again, contrived. But this one kind of goes a little bit beyond that. Last Friday, the Grammy-nominated singer released a music video for his recent single, Try That in a Small Town. As the title suggests, the three-minute ballad is about an explicit warning to demonstrators not to attempt their social justice shenanigans in the rural South, buddy! Apparently, Aldean was not too pleased with the nationwide Black Lives Matter movement for the police-involved murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor in 2020. As evidenced by the inflammatory new song, the track is not just a statement of Aldean's personal point, but a disturbing call to arms, making Toby Keith's famous post-9/11 anthem look rather quaint. Aldean, cuss out a cop, Aldean sings in the first verse, spit in his face, stomp in the flag, and light up. Yeah, you think you're tough? Try that in a small town. Okay, first of all, Aldean, Jason, do you know how many people shoot at cops in small town America? It happens a lot, all right? And this is just a lie. Your entire narrative is a lie. We respect honor and justice here. How many freaking times in this year alone, it's July, how many times this year alone have I had to deal with an absolute horrible story of police officers under fire in a small town? You put this out there like there's never a freaking crime out there. Dude, your streets are as bloody as any other city out there. Shut up, you arrogant jackass. It gets a whole lot worse, though, for Aldean. The chorus continues, see how you make it down the road. Around here, we take care of our own. You cross that line, it won't take long for you to find out. I recommend you don't try that in a small town. So basically, he's telling black people, get in line. Now, elsewhere, Aldean praises the South's good old boys who are raised upright In maybe the song's darkest lyric, he suggests he's been gearing up for a race war. Got a gun my granddad gave me. They say one day they're going to try to round it up. Now, once again, it doesn't matter that this moron buffoon Aldean. And by the way, I got a twist on this one coming up here after the break that you're going to be like, what? A reminder of something. But this buffoon Aldean still thinks, I mean, there are people where you can commit armed robbery, and there are places where they'll give the criminal who committed armed robbery their guns back. So this idea of you're going to try to round up my guns, that's just your, you know, rage sex fan fiction that basically, you know, no, it's not happening. That doesn't happen. You guys have been screaming for 40 freaking years about your guns getting rounded up. Dear Lord, no one's guns are getting rounded up. As a matter of fact, guns seem to be reproducing on their own at this point because there's everyone. Look, there's five here in the corner. I have no idea where they came from. Like bunnies. You guys... if the lyrics weren't direct enough, the new music... I'll tell you what, I'll say that. I'll take a break. Come on back. More on this just travesty, but I guarantee it's going to be a big hit because it's about white people, you know, putting down lynch mob justice on the minorities. And, you know, that's and trust me, that's going to sell well in a lot of these towns because we're the real victims here. Yeah. Yeah, as you guys shoot up your own cops and basically sit there paranoid in your mom's basement talking about, they're coming for my guns! You're losers. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break, come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Voice of Minnesota. And once again, I don't have, there's some country songs I like. I'm coming more around on Garth Brooks, Little Nas X, which really upsets a lot of country music fans, but that was probably one of the best country songs I ever heard, frankly. Anyway, let me get back to Jason Aldean. So Aldean is putting this out. The music video is for Try That in a Small Town, shows Aldean and his band performing in front of a white municipal building with an American flag hanging out. The rest of the video features footage of looters and rioters, including a Fox News broadcaster in the 2020 riots that took place in Aldean's native Georgia. It should be noted, as people have pointed out, he shot this at the site where a white lynch mob strung up Henry Choate at the Murray County Courthouse in Columbia, Tennessee, after dragging his body through the streets with a car in 1927. That's where Aldean chose to sing about murdering people who don't respect police. He chose to sing there. Yeah, it's the song's about lynching. It's you might as well Aldean might as well name the song "Let's Lynch 'Em." You know that's what the song is about. And, you know, they want to kind of put out this idea that, no, just about small town. But no, these guys, they want to go on out there and they want to embrace this far racism, anti, you know, democracy mentality. And they have, it's these guys that are out there saying, just because I sang shoot all Democrats in the head, what makes you think I was asking for people to shoot Democrats in the head? You're just a crazy liberal. And that's who they are. And it's very clear from the lyrics of this song where he filmed this. This is about, we are white rural America. We are ready to start lynching black people once again. That's what the song's about. As a matter of fact, I want, if you call up the country station, say, play that Jason Aldean lynching song. And just, you know, they just say, you know, the lynching song. I bet you they know exactly which one you're talking about. Around the same time, Aldean was making headlines for his near collapse on stage over the weekend. Twitter and TikTok users began creating a latest track of the racist dog whistles to promote vigilante violence. Many have interpreted the song as pro-lynching. It clearly seems to be, especially when you see where they shot the video at. It should be noted. Now, here's where this is a little bit of a twist. Jason Jason Aldean, if you might know that name, he was the country music performer on stage in Vegas when the psychopath who thought big government was going to try to take his guns away opened fire with basically military-grade weaponry from a hotel window and killed 60 people, wounded 400 people. And Jason Aldean was lucky to get out of there alive. If you go up online, you can see the videos, including with Ellen DeGeneres and stuff, of Jason Aldean out there talking about how this was a horrible thing. It seems like now today, the only thing the guy learned from that incident where 60 of his fans were murdered and 400 of his fans were injured is the guy in the hotel room had a point. It sure as heck does seem that way. What an arrogant ass he is. He also has been feuding with fellow country singer Maren Morris. The country star famously referred to his wife, Brittany Aldean, as Insurrection Barbie after she made transphobic remarks on Instagram. So, yeah. No, this is not right. And the reality is they made this song because someone made the point, like, okay, how many people did this have to go by to finally get to a point where not only was it recorded, not only was it put on an album, it's released as a single and they made a music video of it with the intention of having the music video filmed at the site of a notorious lynching. And the reality is this is the new conservative media environment. They know there are a lot of racists who want to bring lynching back. They know there's a lot of racists who want to start opening fire on perceived enemy liberals. They know this. So they create this stuff and release it. And it's better for them to feign ignorance. Oh, we had no idea the song, which was calling for vigilante justice that we filmed a video of at a site of a notorious lynching, was going to be perceived as pro-lynching. As they rake in the dollars from, you know, the people who are like, make another song about killing black people. Make another song about killing black people. Because that's who Jason Aldean is. Absolute scum. Hour two. It's up next.
Turning. How old are you today, Patrick?
22.
22? Wowie.
I wish.
33, correct?
Yes, that's right.
33 years old. So a big happy birthday to him.
Indeed.
Coming up a little bit later on from Into the Woods over at the Guthrie Theater, Max Witanowicz is going to join us as he'll talk about that production as well as other things at the Guthrie. Cooligan coming up here in just a few moments. I made a comparison today, but this is, I got to read the story. We just have to go through the story before I go and we talk about the comparison I made today. The driver of the pickup. Now, you've seen the video of the MnDOT guy that got upset about the zipper merge.
Oh, the vigilante man who, swerved in.
Yeah. It goes exactly where you'd think this would go. The driver of the pickup truck that was caught on MnDOT traffic cameras smashing into the side of a driver who was attempting to correctly zipper merge received cautions in the incident. The Minnesota Department of State Patrol, rather, confirmed that the driver of the Ford F-150, a 41-year-old man from Circle Pines, received a citation for unsafe lane usage following the incident on Highway 10 in Coon Rapids. The driver was also cited for driving without a license and driving without insurance. Though there doesn't seem to be any action being taken at this time as to whether the crash deliberate malicious act. I don't know why. We've all seen the film. He clearly drove into the guy. That's just that. Now, the video shows the car driver approaching the lane closure for a zipper merge between Round Lake and 7th when the pickup driver suddenly swerves left and slams into them, sending the car partially into the median. The driver of the pickup truck is now seen stepping out of their vehicle following the crash, hitting the hood repeatedly. And initially, I thought this was just raging. This was in. Now you realize the reason why he was hitting it is because he was like, I don't have insurance. He was just so angry because he didn't have insurance or a driver's license, and he knew he was in trouble. Hilarious. Video of the incident went viral on social media, sparking a debate over the correct procedure to zipper merge. According to MnDOT, drivers who merge clear early instead of zipper merging can cause more headaches for others, and motorists are instead urged to use both lanes until reaching the defined merge area and then proceeding at alternate of the open lane of the zipper fashion. The driver whose car was struck in the video appears to be zipper merging correctly by proceeding to the merge point further along the highway. So here is the analogy I made today. So you have a guy who, furious at someone he thinks is doing something wrong, which they weren't, furious at someone he thinks is breaking the law, which they weren't, intentionally ramming his car into the other car, allegedly, to try to stop him. And we now find out that that person himself was driving illegally without a driver's license and insurance. Tell me you're a Republican without saying I'm a Republican. It's that right there. Tell me I'm a Republican without saying I'm a Republican. It's that right there. A person who's breaking the law, actually breaking the law, getting upset with someone who's not doing anything wrong, literally causing a commotion to try to stop them because they just don't like it, and then acting like, oh, I'm angry. There you go. I think it's. Did we ever expect this to any, really go anywhere else?
If he is a right winger, I'm sure Newsmax will give him a show. Maybe next week.
He'll have him reviewing chicken sandwiches around the outstate metro area. Did you see that? Apparently, someone sent me the cartoon from Alpha that said about the woke hole. Have you heard about the woke hole? Sounds interesting. It's a woke hole. Hello. You know, I am adventurous. So, you know, I don't mind exploring the woke hole. You guys don't run anything by, editors at all, do you? Not at all. The woke hole. Okay. That's going to be my new safe word, I guess. Woke hole!
Could be your ads on maybe a new social media platform.
Come take a look at me on OnlyFans. You might discover the woke hole. All right. Oh, God, that one hurt my eyes. That one hurt my eyes. I also brought up the fact, I don't know if you saw the story from In-N-Out Burger. Now, have you had In-N-Out Burger?
Oh, yeah. Well, as a kid, I used to live out in California, so I've had plenty of In-N-Out Burgers. Those are delicious.
They're delicious, but yeah. they're not the best by even close. I don't think. I can name off 10 burgers off the top of my head right now, including 3 chain burgers, which I think are substantially better than In-N-Out. And I think it's In-N-Out just has this kind of, well, I think it comes from an area where there's not a lot of great burger places. I mean, it's just not. I don't think the West Coast is known for kind of the meat and potatoes kind of meals sort of thing. And so I think that's why it gives them it. But I'd make an argument Shake Shack. I'd make an argument Five Guys. I'd make an argument Culver's. I'd even make an argument like A&W at times I'm sorry. I mean, I had it. I took the kids specifically last year to the In-N-Out Burger in Vegas, an adventure. And we had the food there. And, you know, even my kids are like, Dad, this isn't good. Gordy's up in Cloquet when the Convention Grill was open. Matt's, you know, 5'8", does a pretty good burger. We can run the list, man. There's quite a few. Park Tavern's got a great burger. So are you going to get upset with me now?
I haven't had any in so long. That I probably wouldn't be one to even comment on if they're that good anymore. Maybe they used to be back when I got them, but I don't know how they are. The ones you listed, Five Guys has got to be the best one, at least.
Is that one you will eat regularly on occasion when you have a burger?
Yeah, that would be one if I have to choose one of the, you know, I wouldn't call it fast food, but like, that's what I kind of think of, like McDonald's, Burger King. That's like a fast food burger. That's, I don't know what you would quite categorize that as. But yeah, I go with like a Five Guys. Culver's good too.
In-N-Out basically has made a new rule that says that if you're an employee in 5 of their states, that you cannot wear a mask, a medical mask, unless you have a note from a doctor saying you need it. Because like a creepo, you know, sleaze bag on a porn set, I want to see you smile, is apparently their kind of mentality. It's like, we want to see their smiling faces. Smile for us, will you? And so I said to myself, okay, wait a minute, let me get this right. Your argument for a long time was, don't force corporations to do things overall. Allow the employees, if they wanted to do it, but don't put mandates on the businesses. And now it's, no, employees can't do this. Tell me you're a Republican without saying you're a Republican. Ta-da! It's that simple.
It's interesting. They're from, as you said, they're a West Coast-based franchise, which generally are blue states, so I'm surprised they'd be
doing
it.
Oh, no, they're right-wing. Oh, did you know that? I mean, they put, like, biblical passage on the cups and stuff like that, apparently.
Yeah, I guess it's been that long since I've had some.
I don't think they do it in Vegas, because I think the cups would blow up in flame. But
yeah, that's a good one.
I don't think that's allowed in Vegas. Vegas wasn't
injured. Wow, I didn't know. They're a big right-wing company. Okay.
Oh, yeah. They seem to be. They're kind of in that vein of Chick-fil-A sort of thing. Although Chick-fil-A has now got a diversity manager, and so it's now the woke chicken, which if I've got the woke chicken, I'm ready for the woke hole. There you go. 952-946-6205. We've got our good friend Patrick Cooligan joining us today, correct?
Indeed. We are talking with Patrick Cooligan. We're mainly going to be highlighting his column that he wrote last week.
Yes, yeah. An excellent column. Yes. Where he basically, because he and I think, are about the only two people that are still saying, in case you've forgotten, have you read the report from the DOJ on what the Minneapolis Police Department did? Holy God. It's ugly.
Yes, we're going to be talking about that and why, even though obviously you got to blame the cops on this, but you also need to blame some of the elected officials from Minneapolis as well over the years.
Couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. There is an entire system keeping this in place. And this comes back to what we talked about last week, where I said the question was, is this whole deal with the Department of Human Rights an attempt by the people that want to keep this system in place to try to offset the DOJ's rules by saying, see, we have this because, once again, we pointed out last week, the Department of Human Rights rules basically allow the union to override any kind of change. And I'm like, okay, that's not going to change anything then. So excellent column there. What else you got talking with him
about? And then we're also going to be talking about a right-wing conspiracy theorist who I guess has been rising on right-wing social media that's going to be speaking in Sauk Rapids at a bar that, well, has quite the history of, well, displaying Confederate flags and then also having an owner who has a criminal history. So, kind of fits right in.
Ah, okay. The criminal history guy that says, I'm for freedoms. Oh, really? All righty. It's Patrick Cooligan from Minnesota Reformer talking with Brett right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And as usual on Tuesdays, we are joined by the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. That's Patrick Cooligan. Make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com, by the way, for the latest in Minnesota news and politics, as we are going to be talking through what they've been working on over the past week or so over at the Minnesota Reformer. As today, we'll be talking about Patrick's column on the DOJ report on the Minneapolis Police Department and some of their misconduct. And we'll also be talking about a right-wing activist who will be making an appearance in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota. We'll tell you more about him in just a few minutes. But Patrick, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So let's start off talking about your column that has to do with this DOJ report on the Minneapolis Police Department. The title of it, by the way, is A Close Reading of the DOJ's Breathtaking Report on the Unlawful Behavior of the Minneapolis Police Department. And as I think lots of folks know from this report, there's lots of, well, not so good stuff in here, including, well, basically just some highlights. The report showed that roughly three quarters of the time when the MPD used force, it really wasn't necessary. They also, as you pointed out, when you searched unlawful in that report, it turned up 45 times, mostly being done by the police. So certainly there's lots of things in here that are very, very disturbing. But I'm curious, what aspects of this DOJ report really stood out to you the most and why?
I think there's obviously the racist policing aspect of it. That was the DOJ's mission here, was to figure out if there's a pattern of practice of racist policing. And they found that MPD polices different areas of the city differently based on the racial composition. They are far more likely to stop Black and Indigenous Minnesotans, far more likely to search them, far more likely to use force on them. They show a kind of cavalier attitude toward the use of force. as you mentioned, I think in 3/4 of the cases, they use force on somebody who didn't have a weapon and it wasn't a violent crime. I mean, one example, 22% of the time they use a neck restraint, which I called it a polite word for a chokehold. They didn't make any arrests. So what does that tell you about the threat that the person posed that they put a neck restraint on? They are cavalier in their use of force with youth. If you're black youth, you're more likely to use force on that population than white adults. A special lack of care for people who are undergoing mental illness, beta, and the disciplinary system is completely broken. They do not investigate serious cases. They do not examine body camera footage. The process is, of course, takes years often, and has this kind of Byzantine circuitous route that allows lots of veto points where officers have committed misconduct can be kind of let off. There's the whole issue of coaching, where instead of being disciplined, officers are sent into coaching, which is supposed to be for minor violations, but they found instances of significant and serious misconduct where the officers were sent to coaching instead of disciplined. And when that happens, there's no public record of it, so we don't know about it. I mean, it's just breathtaking. And when you read the whole thing, and that's something I decided to do because I was seeing a lot of kind of debate on Twitter about it. And it just occurred to me that a lot of the people who were making comments hadn't actually read the report, and I hadn't either. And I thought, you know what, as a citizen of Minnesota, I feel like I ought to just sit down and read the whole thing. And it took me a couple nights, and it's engrossing reading, and it's terrible. But the voters of Minneapolis really ought to do their civic duty, I feel like, and do their best to understand within that report and then act on it.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that myself, where I still need to go through and read that entire report, because as you say, it's very, very important to do. And well, lo and behold, I think that's actually a responsible thing to do, to actually, well, read that report before you start commenting on it, as you were talking about, when you see so much of that social media discussion. And it oftentimes is from people who've only read snippets or maybe even none of that whole DOJ report. But as we've established, there's been lots of problems with the MPD over the years, obviously, but I think your column also highlights another part that of the government that also needs to be held accountable for what's been happening, because you mentioned the responsibility of the civil authority, including people like mayors and members of the city council and businesses and other political elites, when it comes to addressing the issues within the Minneapolis Police Department. So let's talk about how they have or largely have not responded to some of this police misconduct over the years, because even though we have this fresh new DOJ report, as a lot of people who have lived in Minneapolis and in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area for years, this is nothing new. So let's talk about that aspect and why some of the leaders do sometimes need to be held accountable, even though obviously this is the MPD with these issues. We still have to hold our leaders accountable who have kind of allowed this to happen over the years.
Yeah, I mean, I think the analogy here is civilian command of the United States military. And when we see mistakes made by the military, our soldiers and officers, enlisted men, are they responsible? Well, everybody's responsible for their own behavior, sure. But ultimately, we have to hold the civilian authorities responsible. And I think the same is true with the MPD. The officers are responsible for their behavior, and the command staff for those under them. But the MPD is under the sole authority of the mayor. And for too long, the MPD has been allowed to kind of just run roughshod over people's rights. And you know, because that MPD endorsement for so long was so important, I think there was a desire to look the other way and sweep issues under the rug. And as long as certain prosperous neighborhoods that are seen as the most important in electing mayors, as long as they were safe, then, you know, who really, then it was less concern about these constitutional violations that were taking place in other neighborhoods. You know, as Martin Luther King said, you know, if we're not all free, if one person is being oppressed and then none of us are free. And in this case, it's even more literally true because, you know, it's certainly true that Black and Indigenous Minnesotans face more significant violations of their rights, but by no means is it only them. You know, there's lots of examples in the report of white people whose rights are being violated, and certainly the press and demonstrators who face retribution for even speaking rudely to police. Will set you up for the opportunity to be to face police force and retribution. And so I think that the people of Minneapolis need to focus on who's ultimately responsible for these constitutional violations and the unlawful behavior of MPD. And certainly it's the officers, but it's the political power structure that includes the mayor and the type of business and political elites that generally help mayors get elected. Previously, it was the police union. I think the police union has obviously far less influence than they ever have. But keep the focus where it belongs. And I'll say also that with respect to the current mayor, you know, the violations that the DOJ investigators found continued after the murder of George Floyd. And so even though there was that earthquake event, the behavior continued, and this mayor is responsible. He was elected in 2017. He owns that department, and he ought to be held accountable for their failures.
Well, and speaking of people being held accountable for this, that's certainly at the local level in Minneapolis, which is very, very important. But at the end of your column, you also talk about the need for intervention from Attorney General Merrick Garland. And I'm curious what role you think federal authorities could have in trying to clean up some of the misconduct, because I think you talked about in your article the example of the Department of Justice, which was created in the 1870s. Was largely responsible for, at least in that era, kind of wiping out the Ku Klux Klan. So obviously the DOJ could certainly play a role in this as well, along with Attorney General Merrick Garland, in trying to clean up the MPD.
Yeah, and I would hope that the city would put its fate into the DOJ's hands and say, you know, tell us what we need to do. And I think it's going to be a close monitoring of the department so that they are properly auditing MPD for the kind of stops they make, the searches they make, the use of force. Are they auditing the body camera footage? Are they respecting people's constitutional rights? How are they treating people who are mentally ill? I think we need some federal supervision as well as state supervision. Because Minneapolis has shown it is simply unable to properly supervise this department.
We can read that column over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Again, Patrick's column titled, A Close Reading of the DOJ's Breathtaking Report on the Unlawful Behavior of the MPD. I briefly want to touch on one more article that you guys are working on, and this has to do with a right-wing activist who is going to be appearing in Sauk Rapids coming up. Because over the past few years, you've probably heard us and others here on AM 950 talk about some of these far right-wing celebrities who hold events throughout Minnesota, usually talking about conspiracy theories with voter fraud, elections, COVID conspiracy, CRT, you name it. Well, there's another guy coming to Minnesota that you may not have heard of, but this is a guy who is rising a little bit in terms of right-wing personalities on social media. His name is Scott Pressler. He's 6'5", has Fabio-like hair, and he was recently invited to the Benton County Republican Party to speak at Raleigh's Rednecks and Longnecks in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota. So, Patrick, tell us a little bit about this guy and this event and why it kind of caught your attention over at the Minnesota Reformer.
Yeah, interesting guy. Our reporter, Dina Winter, has named him the Republican Fabio. You have to see the photo to get it, I guess. But he has an interesting kind of gimmick where he goes into inner city areas and he hires the unsheltered to help clean up the city, quite literally. But he's also responsible for a lot of election misinformation and helped organize these Stop the Steal rallies and was at the January 6th event. He was apparently not in the building, not in the Capitol, so we can't really call him an insurrectionist. But as far as I'm concerned, if you're saying that the election was stolen, you're spreading disinformation and you're causing problems for the American Republic. And so he's just another kind of celebrity or quasi-celebrity Republican. There's now like a cottage industry of them and coming up to speak at the county party, and the state party mentioned his appearance. And then, you know, there's the whole thing of this bar, because apparently they have a collection of Confederate memorabilia, which is particularly galling in Minnesota, where we were the first state to send volunteers for the Civil War. And the Minnesota First played a hugely important role at Gettysburg. And so anybody who collects Confederate memorabilia in the state of Minnesota is they're historically ignorant and or they obviously are showing their what's in their heart, I'm afraid. And so I have no idea why a county Republican Party is trying to actually win votes amongst mainstream Minnesotans would want to do an event like this at a bar like that.
And we don't have time to go into the details of this, but the owner of this bar even has quite the interesting history, as he was convicted back in 2011 of striking a black man with his Ford Bronco in St. Cloud after he swerved at and exchanged insults, including, well, racial insults, with a group of black men walking along a road. Question I have for you on this is that the state Republican Party in Minnesota does not seem to be distancing itself from the event, because I would even think like 10 or 15 years ago, either party, either the Republicans or the Democrats, would be doing everything within their power to try to distance themselves from a guy like this who might be speaking at one of their county party's local chapters.
Right. I mean, you know, Republicans, even though they're close in both the House and Senate, you know, their power center is in places in rural Minnesota, where it's just an article of faith that former President Trump won the 2020 election, and that COVID is overblown, and et cetera, et cetera. And so you have this problem for them where the base of the party is far too extreme for Minnesota. But of course, they have a huge influence in how the party operates. And until they can figure that out, they're going to have trouble with statewide elections.
Well, you can read more about that at MinnesotaReformer.com, MinnesotaReformer.com, as we have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Patrick, as always, thanks for coming on the show today.
Always a pleasure, Brett.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Guthrie Theater is still at it here. Their summer musical this year is Into the Woods. It's playing on the Wordle Thrust stage that goes until August 13th. I saw it. It's exceptional. Go see it. Joining us to talk about the production is Max Watanowicz. I hope. Did I get that right? Did I get that right, Max?
Matt, you got that right. Exactly.
Yes. Max Watanowicz is joining us. He plays Cinderella's father and steward in the musical, and he's kind enough to take some time to talk about the production. Thanks for joining us, Max. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Now, I want to first talk about the musical itself. it's a little bit, I mean, it's a very enjoyable musical, but it is a little bit odd of a musical because it really is two very different halves of a musical, you know, kind of, you know, it's on one side. That first, the first half of the musical is this very familiar revisiting of a lot of fun, you know, fairy tales, correct?
Right. So you got Cinderella, you got Little Red Riding Hood, you've got Rapunzel, you got Jack and the Beanstalk, all sort of mashed together in a big, yeah, a mashup of sorts of fairy tales.
It kind of pulling them all together in their actual form, but realize, you know, and this kind of very creative idea by Stephen Sondheim, who wrote this, that the you know, kind of that these fairy tales all existed within the same area at the same time and kind of, you know, unbeknownst to all the rest of us, interacted with each other.
Right. And then the second act, in your words, is very, very different, I'd say. It sort of explores what happens once everyone's wishes come true and all the bad people are punished and all the good people get what they want and kind of what happens when you get everything you ever dreamed of. And some of them are, let's say, not quite as happy as they thought they'd be.
It's deep. I mean, for lack of a better way to say it, I mean, it's, I guess the thing that is surprising about it is that, I mean, and I like musicals. I go to a lot of them and I enjoy them greatly. The thing about this is one that really kind of, you know, we're going to have you kind of feeling like this is very normal. And then the second half of this is, let's look at the consequences of all these fairy tales and what happens afterwards. It's an insanely deep musical from Sondheim on this one.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, it's what I think audiences are really responding to is that really familiar you know, way in, you know, we all grew up knowing these fairy tales. A lot of us did. And so we think we know the fairy tale back and forth. And so then to get to intermission and think, wow, that's really nice. In fact, it's funny because some people leave at intermission thinking it's over. It all kind of ties up very nicely. But then the narrator of the show says to be continued. And in the second act, she says once upon a time later. So this whole thing sort of looks at what happens after Happily Ever After, which I think people, our audiences are really responding to and finding very moving. But yes, very, very deep, I would say. You're right.
Max, you've done this one, and then also I noted that Sunday in the Park with George, which is also a Sondheim. Is Sondheim a writer that you're drawn to? His works that they're something that you find a direct attachment to?
Oh, absolutely. I think you know, Sondheim is one of the great musical theater writers ever, certainly of the 20th century. And I think part of why actors especially are really drawn to the material is because it's very rich, it's very complex. There's a lot going on, even for, you know, I'm not the lead of this show, but there's still lots of juicy material to sort of sink your teeth into for the actor. Plus, these shows get done all the time because audiences, you know, I think a fair number of audience members really like the challenge of being sort of confronted with these really complex and interesting ideas about family and children and wishes and how your life can change on a dime. There's some really universal themes in it. So while I think it's really complicated and complex, I think audiences respond to this material in ways that they don't know. I've done this play 3 times before. This is my 4th time.
Really?
And, yes. And, you know, those were all 20 years ago. And now to come back to it and revisit the story again, you know, as an adult is, just gives me an entirely new perspective on the material.
The lineup you've got here. I went and saw this, and I'm going to just run through. I mean, this is Sasha Andreev, Anna Hashizumi. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Susie Jewell, Trevor James, Robert Knight, Madeline Trumbull, Emily Tyra, Regina Marine Williams, fantastic. John Yee, yourself here. The cast on this. Because this is the thing. Here's the other thing about this musical, as you talked about, because you have these very distinct stories that are intertwining, you actually have to have quite a few leads. I mean, it really is.
There's
so many leads. I've rarely seen a musical this deep in talent, as far as the quality of actors and actresses that they've gotten here. I mean, it really is amazing.
Well, and that's really kind of you to say. Thank you. I would just note as well that, you know, about 2/3 of our cast is local talent, so folks who live right here in town. About 1/3 came from New York and L.A., and those folks are all knocking it out of the park. But I would also add that many, many, many of these local actors are also making their Guthrie Theater debut with this show. Mm-hmm. So it just speaks to the depth of talent, the huge wealth of concentrated, really talented people we have in this community making this show work. It's a cast of 15, and every single person has got to really be on their game. Otherwise, the show falls pretty flat. And I'd say I think everyone is really knocking it out of the park.
Since you brought it up, if you don't mind me asking a little bit about that, because your background is St. Olaf. Susie Jewell, I know, is Augsburg there. You've got, is it, as Minnesota develops its own artistic community and our own actors community, you know, is there a benefit, do you think, here? Because obviously Los Angeles, New York, there are so many schools, so many theaters, so many of this, but you can get buried and lost in that if because there is just so much out there. Here, with a centralized, you know, we got a few great universities that have got very good theater programs, very good music programs as well, and you've got this gem in the Guthrie, and it you know, it seems to be really cultivating a lot of, you know, actors and actresses that are coming out of Minnesota and not just staying here, but going on and doing other things in other markets as well.
I think that's absolutely right. I think, you know, New York and LA, markets like that, Chicago as well, are much bigger markets. So for an actor like myself, you know, finding myself in a huge community like that, I'm one of 1,000, right? Where here in Minnesota, the community's a little bit smaller. So if I'm one of 1,000 elsewhere, I'm one of 100 here, you know? Mm-hmm. So that is something I would say. I would also say that, you know, the folks who, the part of the reason that we continue to attract top talent here, the reason that people, you know, if they grow up here and they study here, they come here to work in our arts community, they stay, is because because we have an incredible audience here. The folks who are in our show from out of town keep remarking how smart the Guthrie's audiences are, how invested, how well they listen. And I've found that too. I think audiences here, and we take it for granted because, look, this is just the thing. This is just the place where we grew up. This is the community that we know, and we don't always give ourselves credit for knowing that it's not like this everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, audiences don't listen like this in every town. And part of that is because of great places like the Guthrie and the Children's Theater and Penumbra and Moo and Mixed Blood and 10,000 Things that do incredible work all year long, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I always tell people, go support your local theater. Go see the tours that come through the Orpheum. Go to the Ordway. Go all those places. But also go find incredible theater being made right here in the Twin Cities.
And it's on par. I mean, the Guthrie is on par. Absolutely. With these touring companies, and it really is remarkable. And I can stand by that because I've seen them on the Hennepin Theater Trust. I go see the theater shows over there, but I'll see the stuff at Guthrie. I never miss a show over there, and there is good. It really is a top-notch level facility. And I think as well that it's you know, I remember, what was it? I heard an interview. This was a long time ago. They had a soap opera actor had come out and done Othello here. And he was doing an interview on another station years and years ago. And he said, you know, if I was trying to do this in New York, where I think his soap opera was being produced at the time, he said that he would walk in with people, with 100 other people who are specialized in Shakespearean theater, and he has no chance. And he said he was able to come out here, explore the character, and do it out here, and he was fantastic in it. I remember seeing it, and it was really good. I think that is as well. You kind of get away. You have the ability for people to go. If you're willing to go out to Minneapolis, you're going to get a good theater experience there that's going to, you know, be on par with what you're going to find in a lot of other places, with a better chance to be able to shine.
Absolutely. You know, this town really, everyone in the theater community knows that this is a hidden secret that we have here. It's a, it's a poorly hidden secret, but every time I talk with people from out of town, they say, I had no idea that there was such an incredible community here, not only of artists, but of audiences. And that speaks to how well funded and well attended our theaters are. And, you know, coming back from COVID and the pandemic and everything, You know, theaters are struggling. And so the more people can get out and see theater, the more people can get up off the couch, go out to dinner and go see a show anywhere, you know, the more that kind of thing can stay right here in town.
Max Wotanowicz is joining us right now. He's in the production of Into the Woods. I got to talk about, since I brought up Shakespeare, I got to talk with you. You were just in Hamlet there, which was also exceptional, correct?
Yeah. Yes, I just got off that. We did that April, May. On the Wordle Fest stage.
And what was your character in Hamlet?
My character in Hamlet was my character's name is Osric. He is if you saw the show, if you saw Into the Woods, you saw my character, the steward, who runs around chasing after the prince and does his bidding. That's kind of who Osric was, just a little bit. He was kind of a servant guy, had a lot of secrets, knew a lot of things in the castle. But I don't know what it says about me that I keep getting cast as servants and castles. But you know what? I'll take it. It's a career. It's
because you do it. You treat, there is no such thing as that kind of small role. And by
that's
basically
right.
Approaching it and elevating it, I was in Chicago once and I saw a theater production and it's like half the people just didn't want to be there because they weren't the leads. And you could kind of tell, and you do really well here. Two things about that. How in the world are you doing that? That, by the way, that Hamlet production was exceptional, and now this one is exceptional. How, for you as an actor, it must have been grueling days finishing up Hamlet and getting prepared for Into the Woods.
You know it is. Thank you for saying all that. That's really kind. I never once did I ever think, man, this is grueling, because it's the thing I love to do more than anything. And I just consider myself so blessed, and I'm so honored to be working as an actor. You know, I have friends who work all over the country, and some of them would kill to work at the Guthrie. And the fact that I got to do two shows there this year in a row is just such a blessing. So I while there are long days, and some days I lay down in bed and think, oh my God, I just need to sleep for, you know, 20 hours. I'm thrilled. It's the thrill of a lifetime, truly.
Well, and then if I can ask a little bit of stagecraft question here for you, to go from how they did the production of Hamlet to then see them tear that down and build the stage for Into the Woods. That's got to be kind of fun, because they really, of all the productions I've seen on the Thrust stage, they've really changed it up, and they never kind of hang their hat on something they've done before. So it's got to be kind of fun, because reality is you're stepping into a stage environment that, even though you were just on that stage, it's a completely different stage.
Oh, absolutely. It's wild. You know, you enter the Guthrie Theater, the Wordle Thrust stage has audience on three sides. So there's a couple of entrances that you can make from below the audience, you know, so you're kind of coming on stage from below the seats. And so it's really, I've done a couple shows there now, so I always kind of take a little picture in my mind of what it looks like coming from that, we call it a VOM, that entrance sort of downstage left, and to just remember what the stage looks like, because absolutely, you're right. Every time you go there, you see it totally transformed into something new. And that just speaks to the incredible artistry of their set and their costume shops there, all the incredible artisans that are working on transforming that space.
You're in Into the Woods until August. Anything coming up after that we should keep an eye on the horizon?
You know, I've got a couple shows in the hopper, but honestly, those are shows that are not announced to the public yet, so I don't think I can share that. However, I will say I do host a monthly show tunes series featuring local talent. It's called Musical Mondays, and it performs at Lush Lounge and Theater, which is in Northeast Minneapolis. So you can see me there the first Monday of most months.
First Monday. All right. I'll make sure we people know about that one. All righty. Into the Woods, once again, this runs until August 13th at the Guthrie Theater. Go get tickets. Max Wotanowicz, once again, plays Cinderella's father, Steward, kind enough to join us today. Max, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for sharing your craft with us. I do appreciate that greatly. And all my best for the entire cast through the run on this, okay?
Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Max Wotanowicz joining us right now from the Guthrie Into the Woods. Go see that. It's fun. It is a very different kind of musical. And like I said, it makes you think a lot more, which is a little heady, but that's the kind of the charm of it. Sondheim just at peak form, really. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I should mention really quick, of course, Trump, saying it looks like he's going to get charged with the crime. And then in Michigan, they've charged 16 people with trying to overthrow an election. Ruh-roh, consequences. So we'll see that there. But I do want to, I was going to talk about that, but I want to, Jason Aldean has released this statement. And apparently Jason Aldean has not heard the song by Jason Aldean, because he's trying to tap dance around a lot of his lyrics here and the symbolic imagery of where he filmed the video. In the past 24 hours, I've been accused of releasing a pro-lynching song, a song that's been out since May. Okay, the fact that you've been released since May doesn't negate the message that you're sending with it. It's like, it couldn't be pro-lynching. It's been out since May. That makes no sense. And it was subject to the comparisons that I direct, quote, was not pleased, too pleased with the nationwide Black Lives Matter protests. These references are not only meritless, but dangerous. There's not a single lyric in the song that reference race or points to it. There isn't a single video clip that isn't real news footage. And while I can try and respect others that have their own interpretation of a song and music, this one goes too far. Now, stop, okay? First of all, your lyrics. Cuss out a cop. You know, you're showing images of black people protesting, and then you're singing the lyrics, cuss out a cop, spit in his face, stomp in a flag and light it up. Yeah, you think you're tough. Try that in a small town. What do you mean you're not threatening violence? Yeah, that seems, you have a point where you talk about, you've got my guns, you know, clearly implying you're ready to start shooting at people if you kind of think they're going to take your guns, because no one takes anyone's guns really in this country, for God's sakes, you idiots. So there's that. And then the fact that you filmed this on the site of a notorious lynching, talking about good old boys, the good old boy network. Come on, man. Stop. You got called out on it and you don't like it. As so many pointed out, I was president at Route 91. You know, yeah, you would think that you'd threats of violence. Once again, your lyric, not mine. Yeah, you think you're tough. Try that in a small town. That's a threat. You'd think you would have learned your lesson from watching 60 of your fans get blown away in Las Vegas. Try that in a small town refers to the feeling of a community that I had growing up where we took care of our neighbors regardless of differences of background or belief. Once again, he is saying this about a song where he says, cuss out a cop, spit in his face, stomp on a flag, you think you're tough, try that in a small town. That doesn't sound like your understanding of other points of view. It sounds like if you do something I disagree with, I'm going to beat you up. Or, considering where you filmed your video, lynch you. Anyway, he's desperately trying to, this is just about country values. It's pretty clear what it's about, Jason. And don't worry, you're going to sell a lot of copies of this to the racists out there. You'll make a lot of money off the racist. We see that. That's what this whole thing's about. You trying to actually argue that your lyrics are not the lyrics that they are, that's pretty stupid. It's about good. Dude, read the freaking lyrics of your own song. Dear God. All right, Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake. That is coming up next. We are back on a Wednesday with Stein. Have a good one. Till tomorrow, see ya.